ago, we had some comments regarding the constitutionality of that issue, and as we all know, there's always questions about a lot of things, and my own personal view is that while a lot of things could be challenged, my biggest concern is if it's a policy that we want to enact, is the threshold of constitutional question, does it weigh against what we're trying to do? If it's a disagreement among legal folks, I'm more inclined, if we like the policy, to go ahead and take that risk. But if the threshold is too high of constitutionality, then I think we should err on finding alternatives. And my own personal view was that the points that were brought up by Ms. Meyer from the ACLU were accurate based on previous experience, that we had a serious constitutional issue. But since the committee clearly indicated we would like to do the policy, could we find another alternative? And so we have some to discuss today. With that, I'd like to ask Senator Devlin to come forward and discuss what has been done since our last meeting, and then we'll talk to some of our legal folks about the proposed changes. And also, Senator Devlin, before you begin, do you have a copy of the Dash 3 amendment as well?
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to see what you did. Okay, welcome.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I very much appreciate being able to go here first today. There are some other issues percolating in the building, which means I have to leave here very shortly. I'm here in support of SB 1084 and the Dash 4 amendments. After a legitimate constitutional concern was raised in the public hearing on SB 1084, I asked and worked with the Attorney General's office and with legislative counsel to review and come back with suggestions that meet constitutional muster. I believe that the Dash 4 amendments meet the muster and have both legislative counsel and the Solicitor General, Mary Williams, here to answer any constitutional questions that you may have. I believe that I addressed most of the concerns brought forward in that testimony. I do not, however, believe that you will not have testimony still in opposition to the measure. And the reason that I say that is I believe that the ACLU still will probably point out some issues. I have discussed those issues with the Solicitor General, and she has assured me that they feel comfortable defending this particular statute should it be enacted, with that concern even being voiced here today. Because the primary focus of this, the underlying factor of this bill, is to make our local streets and highways as safe as possible. The bill requires all pedestrians to meet certain safety criteria before engaging in this type of activity. I believe the Dash 4 amendments address safety concerns that ODOT and other local jurisdictions might have. Clearly, I believe in this measure, the focus is on safety. The focus is not on a particular individual or a particular group. It is quite common for us to have specific requirements on people that are engaging in areas where there may be safety concerns, and it is actually quite uncommon in those areas for there to be some issue of liability and some requirement for there to be liability coverage for those activities. So I once again request you to support SB 1084 and the Dash 4 amendments, and in doing so, continue to allow the firefighters to do this meaningful work that affects so many children with neuromuscular diseases. I would like to point out, too, though, that I think in actually some very real way, because of how this is crafted, that actually if you were going to approach this from a standpoint of free speech, you might view that this is actually enabling free speech, because this is saying under what certain conditions any group or any individual can actually engage in this type of speech.
Thank you, Senator Devlin. First of all, is there any questions for Senator Devlin? Senator George.
Senator Devlin, do we know for sure that that I or another or a group of us could, in fact, secure $1 million worth of liability insurance?
Well, to be honest, Mr. Chairman, Senator George, I have had my own personal experiences of having, and obviously for political speech in my case, of having to secure various public facilities and having to have proof of liability insurance to be able to actually utilize those facilities. In fact, I would probably do it anyway, being given that in some cases I might be personally liable, and I think it would be only prudent to actually have liability insurance in place.
And we will be hearing from the attorneys, and we can ask
we
that
okay.
question as
okay,
well.
Great. Thanks.
Any other questions for Senator Devlin? Okay, thank you, Senator. I appreciate your need to move on. I would ask that the Solicitor General and Legislative Council please come forward to discuss the Dash 4 Amendment, what it does, and your threshold of concern for constitutionality issues. And I see, Ms. Altmaier, you also drafted the Dash 3 Amendment Senator Starr has brought forward. And after we go through the Dash 4, would like to then to talk about the Dash 3 and whether that what that does and any concerns, if any at all, regarding that. So I'll let you guys decide who wants to go first.
Check describing that.
Dash 4. Chair Metzger, members of the committee, Heidi Altmaier, Legislative Council. I will first start off by just describing what the Dash 4 amendments do and how they change the original bill. Really, there are just three things that we need to focus on. The first thing it does is add one more safety requirement, which is that the pedestrian or the group must wear high visibility clothing. Secondly, this amendment opens this up to any pedestrian or to any group, and thirdly, what it does is it takes out the requirement that the group or pedestrian must be out there to raise funds for an organization. It can be for any group or any pedestrian for any reason, and that is what goes to the content issues and the constitutionality issues that were raised before this committee at your previous hearing.
Okay. Mr. Rutlinger.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ted Reutlinger with Legislative Council. As you heard at your last hearing, the previous bill had some constitutional issues because it was directed in part at the content of the speech that people would be engaged in. The Dash 4 amendments eliminate that provision. In other words, it's no longer obviously unconstitutional or arguably so because it's not directed at content. It is instead directed at safety. It creates an exemption from this pedestrian law to allow people to move around the side of the road and into the street if they satisfy certain safety requirements. And the decisions of the Oregon Supreme Court on Article 1, Section 8 reflect the fact that if a law is directed at a harm that the legislature can regulate, then and is not based upon the content, then they will look at the scope of the law to see if it somehow over-restricts speech. In other words, is it overbroad? And in this case, we've tried to draft this so that it is directed simply at safety issues. Obviously, there are various hurdles that people have to jump through in order to be able to qualify for the exemption. A court would look at those, I think, and judge whether or not those conditions are reasonable. In other words, if the court found that they were totally unreasonable and that nobody could satisfy them or that a number of people would be restricted from qualifying, then they might view this as perhaps overly restrictive. So I can't tell you that this Dash 4 amendment is absolutely constitutional and bulletproof and will survive judicial scrutiny. Certainly it will raise issues about how much speech is affected by things like the sign requirement and the insurance and the permit thing. But it is much better than the constitutionally than the original bill, and I think is clearly defensible before a court.
Okay. I think we'll go to the Solicitor General, then we'll ask any questions of any of our legal experts here.
Chair Metzger and members of the committee, I agree with everything he said, and I think it was a very nice summary. The litigation in the Article 1, Section 8 area is very difficult to predict with certainty what the outcome will be, and so I'd underscore what he said at the end of the testimony, that we can't guarantee this 100%, but this is certainly a great improvement over the earlier bill that you saw. It now does focus not on group membership or on the content of communication or on the reasons that a pedestrian might be on the roadway, but focuses on the safety concerns that underlie the prohibition on pedestrians being on the roadway in the first place. And I think that this is defensible against a constitutional challenge.
Thank you. I have one question that I'll open up to questions from the committee. And I guess I'll direct this at Mr. Rutlinger first, and anyone else wants to chime in. regarding the liability insurance, the million-dollar liability insurance that would be required as part of this. Do you feel that that threshold is too low, too high in terms of impeding others' rights to go out into the road?
Mr. Chair, one thing I could say is that the more hurdles you place in the way of somebody getting into the street to express protected expression, and the more difficult it becomes to defend the law. At some point, you cross over the line from reasonable to unreasonable, and we can't predict where that line is. I will say that there are a host of statutes that require people to obtain permits before they can engage in protected expression. You know, permits for billboards, for example, or perhaps parade permits, various other laws that the courts have treated as reasonable time, place, manner restrictions in order to exercise your right to speech. This one is difficult to predict. Obviously, some groups will be much more able to secure insurance than a single individual who may want to take advantage of this exception, and that would be for the court to really weigh that out and see what they thought.
Well, the one observation I would have on that is that on the safety issue, while, as you know, I'm not an attorney, but just looking at it from a layman's standpoint, is if you are on the side of the road and you are carrying signs or any type of speech you're engaged in, and it's protected, that continues. What this piece of legislation does is go beyond that, and we're putting people in the middle of a road. And it would seem to me that if you're going to go from being on a sidewalk or other ways, and you're actually going to put yourself in harm's way, that it would seem to me that that would be reasonable, because we're doing something we normally would not allow people to be in the road because of the hazard, that a liability policy, if you're going to go into that, would be a reasonable expectation, as opposed to requiring people to have liability insurance to be on sidewalks holding signs.
Mr. Chair, and that's clearly the distinction that I, as a lawyer, arguing before the Oregon Supreme Court, would want to make and argue, that it really is different than standing in a public square, standing on the sidewalk, standing in a place where you don't have cars going back and forth. I would use that argument to support the fact that this is really about safety and therefore allowable.
Okay. Questions from the committee on the dash fours of our experts here? Okay. While you're still here, Ms. Altmaier, could you comment on the dash three and what it does, and if there's any issues that the three of you would want to address from a legal standpoint on that?
Chair Metzger, the dash threes keep the original bill and just add the proviso that if a local government has an ordinance prohibiting pedestrian solicitation, otherwise known as panhandling, that the local government may continue to enforce that ordinance. Now, as it's just an add-on to the original, the discussion about the original bill still raises the same constitutional issues.
Now, what about, though, would there be a conflict if we adopted the dash 4 and the dash 3? Is there a conflict with putting those together? In other words, modifying the bill by both the dash 4 and the dash 3?
I can start, Mary Williams, again. Chair Metzger, I guess I would have a concern that the Dash 3 amendments, and I'm just looking at them for the first time now, brings back into the mix consideration about soliciting contributions. And even though it's sort of that we have a prohibition, we have an exception, and then we have sort of an exception to the exception, I have a concern whenever the focus is on kind of the content of the speech, and that this brings that question back in. Even if we were to try to combine it in some way with the Dash 4 amendments, I think it would take some careful drafting to make sure that what you haven't brought in is a focus on content of speech as opposed to simply the safety considerations.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Starr.
Yeah, if I were drafting this is not at all how I would have drafted the language for what we're trying to get to. Mm-hmm. Basically, what I would like to have had is, notwithstanding, whatever we're going to put into Senate Bill 1084, a local government can continue to have their ordinance remain in effect. We don't have to go into detail about what the ordinance does. The way this is drafted, I don't disagree with you. That's not basically what I was, what we're attempting to get at here is not having a state law preempt local government. Local government knows their community. They've got legal counsel in their community. The city of Medford believes that their ordinance is constitutional. For us to pass a law that preempts that local ordinance, the goal of the amendment was to deal with that preemption issue. And I agree. I don't think this language is how I would have preferred it coming out.
Okay. Other questions? Okay. If you folks could stay with us just briefly, in case we have something, I'd appreciate it. I know, Ms. Meyer, would you please come forward? We'll get ACLU's reaction to the amendments and discussion that we've had.
Good afternoon, Chair Metzger, members of the committee. Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. I appreciate the opportunity to testify before you today on these various amendments. I've also had an opportunity to look at the Dash 2 amendments, which my understanding is Senator Metzger brought forward, and I've had an opportunity to provide the Dash 2s and Dash 4s to various other legal folks who do work for the ACLU in the state of Oregon. The concerns we do have with the Dash 4s are particularly focused on the liability. So I absolutely agree. You've now removed the initial content-based restriction that I articulated earlier this week. I also did raise concerns about when you have content-neutral barriers that make it so hard for people. It's ostensibly, not necessarily in this case, but in some cases it might be even a nod or really only eliminate it to some people. I would raise concerns that $1 million liability will prohibit any pedestrian or individual from engaging in this lawfully protected speech, that it really does get down to an organization. I don't know that any of us personally carry $1 million liability protection we might do in connection to our employment or auto insurance or otherwise our homeowners, but in and of itself it's not something that we go out and purchase, although my organization obviously does for use of for various things, and I'm sure many of your organizations do as well. So with all due respect, and I think it was raised at least by the previous panel, that it does make it susceptible. With that said, I would like to turn directly to the Dash 2s and indicate from our perspective that doesn't raise problems for us. The only concern we would have with the DAD and the Dash 2s are, you do not impede traffic or create a traffic hazard. That is neutral. Wearing high visibility apparel in the standards adopted by the Transportation Commission. The only asterisk I have is those would be rules adopted by the Transportation Commission that we would want to follow carefully to make sure that they indeed do not provide such restrictions in the rules, and we would be happy if that's the version you pass and that were to go into effect to continue to monitor this to ensure that those are reasonable and easily accessible to anyone. So I would really urge the Dash 2s because I don't want this vulnerable to an attack. I don't want to win by litigation and say and kick the whole thing out and wait for, a few more years for it to come back to you all. I would rather, if this is important, to pass something that is neutral and we would feel we wouldn't even be looking at it as a challenge. But unfortunately, with $1 million liability, it's walking into a lawsuit. Whether we win or not, I would never sit here and predict on that case. I'm not that arrogant, I hope, and I try only to testify that I think something's wholly unconstitutional when I think I've probably got good case law and folks behind me. So is that unconstitutional? I don't know. Is a very valid argument made for that? Absolutely. And I would rather not be litigating this. I'd rather move on. So I'd be happy to answer any questions and hope you will seriously consider the Dash 2s as a way to get the ACLU out of your hair.
Thank you, Ms. Meyer. Any questions? Senator George.
Before this would be litigated, okay, and the person has a requirement of $1 million liability, basically you stopped free speech until it got to court, and that bothers me a bunch. Any comment on that?
Chair Metzger, Senator George, correct. I don't disagree with you that you are you are stopping folks, if this is going to be enforced against them, that they don't have a liability fund, excuse me, $1 million insurance fund. I also raise, and this is a more subset, in the dash four is the last sentence, upon issuance of a permit, the permit holder shall provide a copy of the permit to any applicable local jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. So I read that as not when you're at and engaged in the speech activities and you have this permit that, assuming everyone could easily get, you have to show it. It sounds like it's a requirement at the very front end. I wouldn't know who one's supposed to provide it to. I don't know if it's supposed to be happening in rulemaking. So I just raise that as a more minor but a concern. But yes, I mean, we would be dealing with a situation where an individual wants to engage in the same speech that others are engaged in who have who've gone through the hoops and have the liability fund and couldn't, and we'd have to challenge it and they would be stopped, and it would cost the government entity money, and it really doesn't give us any pleasure to do that. That's why I am here, and that's why the ACLU has been in this building for many, many years to help that not happen.
Thank you. Any more questions for Ms. Martin? Senator Stark.
Yes. The liability insurance. So let's assume we pass the dash twos, so no liability insurance is required. What happens when something happens? So you just, the person is has to just take care of it himself? Or?
Chair Metzger, Senator Stark. I mean, I think that, I realize that being in, you know, traffic is hazardous. I certainly wouldn't necessarily recommend it to anyone. Hazards are not gone when people engage in lawful protected speech elsewhere, on the sidewalks, crossing the street. I mean, these hazards occur all the time. So is it arguably slightly more hazardous, which is why you had the policy there in place? Yes. But where do we start drawing the lines about being out in the community, being out in this public forums and engaging in lawful speech that you might injure someone and the risks?
Mr. Chair, is not the risk potentially transferred to the local government if we eliminate the requirement for a liability insurance?
Chair Metzger, Senator Starwell, I would rather they comment. I can't imagine how a neutrally content-based mm-hmm. free speech that you, the state, has opened up this play area would require, if someone engages in that individual, without, they're not seeking permission, and the state hasn't sent them, and the local entity hasn't sent them, they're not on there on behalf of that, and they're not representing them, that would be any different than liability directed when I'm on the sidewalk and picketing or doing other activities. It's just, I certainly would not want to speak for the local jurisdictions, but I think that would be a difficult argument. I'm on the road. I have insurance because, and again, I don't want to compare the two. It's different. State roads, city-operated, controlled roads. I get into a car accident with you. You can't sue the city because it's your streets. And I'm engaged in activity that is legally available for me to engage in, which is driving my car, or in this case, if it's legal activity, petitioning, asking for money. I mean, that's my 2 cents, and I underline that.
Any other comments from Ms. Blair? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We're at a work session, but I know we have some city representatives here. Does anybody want to comment on either the two, threes, or fours while you have an opportunity? If there's more than one, you better come up all at once, because this is the one time for cities. So you are the city guy, okay?
I think I am. Chair Metzger, members of the committee.
Drew the short straw.
I did, apparently, or gotten the wrong way. Thanks for the opportunity to speak. Support, obviously, the efforts. For the record, Ron Papsdorf representing the city of Gresham today. We obviously work with our fire department folks on the Fill the Boot campaign. We've got no issue with that work and no particular issue with an attempt to try to assist them in a way that they think is necessary so that they can continue that work. We do have concerns with the bill, both as it was drafted and with the Dash 4 amendments that would give ODOT the authority to issue permits for accessing city rights of way. With all due respect to ODOT, when we've got 350 miles of city streets in the city of Gresham, I think it would be very difficult to ask ODOT to understand the various safety concerns that might exist on a particular street or a particular intersection within Gresham. So even with notification after the issuance of a permit without that consultation or the ability for the local jurisdiction to give that permit and assess the safety of the situation, we've got concerns with the bill. We have been in contact with the firefighters council. We continue to try to work with them towards some language that would standardize some local permitting process that would still be speech neutral, which we think is important. But the Dash 4 amendments, as they're drafted now, obviously open up the number of people and the types of people and the groups of people. We think there will be even more requests for access to the right-of-way, reinforcing again the importance for that local review of the safety so that we can meet our responsibility to ensure the safety of those pedestrians within the right-of-way and the motoring public. Finally, we have questions about whether this might affect parade permits or other street closure permits that we, as a matter of course, today issue to various groups on our local streets. Would this now give the authority for all of that work back to ODOT to issue a permit for the Teddy Bear Parade in Gresham that happens every year or other street closure permit requests that currently come to the city?
Okay. Any questions for Rob?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I think that's so important because, first of all, let me just ask this question, and we'll go ahead. Is that we see the kids, you know, from the local school, out with their sign on the sidewalk in front of Les Schwab or some other place, and everybody's pulling in and getting the car washed, you know, because you want to help the kids. Well, even so, the same way with Jerry's kids, you know, we're going to fill the boot. And if I have a fire truck and it has a great big sign hanging out over the right of way, and I'm pulling off of that, you know, being used street. And soliciting the money there. Has anybody ever tested? I would imagine that the numbers of people who would contribute would not go down, other than maybe an intimidation factor if you're in the middle of the street blocking me. And I, you know, my thought is, because I had a couple people bring this up to me, is that I'm worried about the backlash factor of pushing this thing so far that people feel, well, that isn't right. Why do they get to do it and I don't? Any comment from the city's perspective?
Chair Metzger, Senator George, I can't really speak to what impact it might have on the fundraising effort or not. I agree with you. There are all kinds of, you know, high school groups doing car washes. They're on the sidewalk, but they don't go into the street. And certainly if they go into the street or stand in the medians, I think we get calls about that and send the police out to try to get them out. We have a great working relationship with our fire department staff, and during the Fill the Boot campaign, they inform us when they're going to do it, where they're going to be. We work together to make that as safe as possible. With any legislation that might be proposed here, we just want to be able to ensure that we can continue that relationship and make sure that not only for them but other groups that might approach us that want to have that same access to the right-of-way are safe.
Yeah.
Start. Thank you. You have the Dash 4s in front of you?
I do.
I have an idea, and I'm glad we have, let's say, council in the room. And if you look at the Dash 4 on line 10, it says the Department of Transportation may issue. What would happen from your perspective, and maybe we can have a comment from Lynch Council, if we added the words or a local government after transportation? So the Department of Transportation or a local government may issue. And then you'd have to add on line 13, shows to the satisfaction of the department or local government, colon. So basically you create a situation where depending upon the jurisdiction of the facility of the roadway, a group would have to either go to the Department of Transportation if it was a state highway, or they could go to, you know, a city or county if it was a local road or a county road. Do you have any initial thought on that?
Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, I do, because that's kind of the direction, at least with some of the language that we're preparing and have talked to the Firefighters Council about, would do just that. It would give that permitting authority to the city. Now, I've been very cautious because I think one of their concerns is they want some sort of fairly standardized kind of review process across it. So they know with certainty when they go to Jurisdiction X, it's going to be reviewed against the same standards as in Jurisdiction Y. So we've been trying to work towards something like that, but it's along those veins, yes.
Sure. It would seem like it's possible that the League of Oregon Cities or the Association of Oregon Counties could, you know, put together a model process that, you know, could be replicated with some sort of ease across the 198 cities, or however many cities there are.
248
schools. Yeah, so I don't know. It seems like that might be possible. It's maybe not exactly what the firefighters were looking for, but I think that would be a way to not preempt local governments.
Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, we certainly would embrace that idea and would like to try to work towards that type of solution.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Madam Chairman, this is a kind of a word of caution. We had tried to reestablish a historic event in Yamhill County called Farmaroo. And the concept behind this was that we were all going to get on our old-time tractors and we were going to drive to the county fair in order to promote the county fair. And it seemed like a really great idea until we bumped into ODOT. And they said, once you formalize that thing, all of a sudden there were a tremendous number of requirements. So now, I'm glad this was brought to my memory, now I'm uneasy about the fact that ODOT would be the people that would be issuing the permit, because it was so onerous that we just said, oh, can't do it. Now, the city was very, very flexible with us. He said, as long as you don't do the following, just basically having fun. But anyway.
Okay. You own a farm all cub?
Yeah, I have a cub. Do you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I always like farm all cubs. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thanks.
Mr. Livingston, you want to come forward? You kind of heard where we're at. We have a number of proposals and other thoughts, and I'll see what you think about those, and then we're going to see what you guys want to do.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Bob Livingston, representing the Oregon State Firefighters Council. I probably shouldn't say this, but this kind of reminds me a little bit of Wag the Dog. While I certainly appreciate the severity and importance of the constitutional issues, this is one of those bills that I hope we don't lose sight of the long-standing tradition that we've had, and ultimately what we're trying to do is, and I don't say this in any crass sense of way, we're trying to get kids out of wheelchairs. We're trying to solve a problem with the 40 neuromuscular diseases. We're trying to continue to infuse dollars here in the state of Oregon with the MDA camps and a whole cadre of things that go on that we've had a long-standing practice of doing. Certainly, we will continue to work with local governments. My suggestion would be if we could, we've worked with ODOT. ODOT supports the Dash 4 amendments. They've had history with this in the past since 99 on how the permit process works. We will continue to work with the local governments, but as you know more as well as I do, time is running short. I think if we are going to amend this to address some of the local government concerns, I would ask that we work on that on the House side, and then we could come back for a quick concurrent vote on that. So with that, Mr. Chair, we appreciate the hard work of everybody. We know this is an important issue. There are, you know, pitfalls, but I hope as policymakers we don't lose sight of really what we're trying to attempt to get after. And I think I hope that the attorneys in the room have ameliorated the concerns that certainly we faced on Tuesday. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Livingston. Any questions for Mr. Livingston? Yes, Senator George.
I'd like to ask that question again. What, you know, there's no question with a fire truck and a great big sign hanging on there out over the road, which we probably could get anybody to agree to, directing them into a parking lot where you could solicit the money. I mean, do you have any experience as to whether or not that would adversely affect fundraising?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, it has a huge impact on that. The fact of the matter is that there have been some jurisdictions, and that's one of the reasons why we have came to you in this body is that because of, and I think it's important, and I forgot to mention this, the issue that we have here, and I think it was touched by the attorneys, let's not lose sight. What we're talking about is making sure that we're not violating law with respect to really the activity that goes on out in the highway. It's, you know, it's improper positioning along a highway that we should not lose sense of it. And so we do have some experience with that, Senator, in the fact that when we discovered that our bill from 99 was repealed because of the constitutional issues, people did abide by that, and it had a tremendous impact on our ability to generate what historically we've been able to do with the Fill the Boot campaign.
Any other questions for Mr. Chair? Okay, thank you, Mr. Lynch.
Thank you.
Okay, well, Committee, this is I think where we are, I think we've had good testimony on what we have before us. We kind of talk about the policy, which I think is good. I am willing to do what the committee wants to do. I can see all the different possibilities there. So I would be open to discussion from the committee of where you want to go, and that's what we'll do. Senator Monroe.
I liked Senator Starr's suggestion of the addition in Section 3 on the Dash 4 amendments allowing local government as well as the Department of Transportation to issue the permits. And with that change, I would support the Dash 4 amendments.
Okay. Senator Johnson.
I just want to make sure that I understand that clearly. It was ODOT or, not that
yes.
We put another impediment so that we've got to do local government and ODOT.
No, or.
Or.
Well, the thing I would, if you guys want to comment on this, I think I know where Senator Starr is going on this, but the way I would read that language would mean it could still preempt local government, because if it's Department of Transportation or a local, the local doesn't want to do it, so I go to Department of Transportation because it's either or. It's not.
Yeah.
I must also have local buy-in, so I go to the Department of Transportation to get my permit. I don't have to go to Gresham to get it because they may turn me down, mm-hmm. and therefore I have to do it. I mean, that's, I think with that line, or you're trying to go, but I think if it's or, that means that you go to the one that you're going to get the permit from.
Yeah.
You would, could still, quote, have preemption because you just bypass the local jurisdiction. So I think the language had to be a little different, I think, than that. Senator George?
The way I was getting at it is if you were going to be on county or city roads, you'd go to the city or county. If you were going to be on a state highway, then you'd go to the state. I mean, that's
the goal. I think that's the intent.
That's the goal. Okay. That's okay. The intent. How do we get there?
That's the intent, yes, I think. Yeah.
Is that something we could capture in rule?
Heidi, would you like to come back up, or any of you? I think you know what we're thinking on this particular part of it. I'd like to just have some thought, because if we ask you to draft something either here or in the House, at least the committee would have an understanding.
Mr. Chair, while they're coming up, I just would like to be a little bit more precise. I'm not trying to create policy and rule. I was just trying to, if you have an either-or, to at least try to give some guidance there so that you didn't have forum shopping for the accommodating jurisdiction.
Yeah. So I think the thought was, and you tell me if this brings up any other changes to what you testified on, but what I understand what Senator Starr was getting at was this basically puts the Department of Transportation in control of all the roads, even those that aren't under their jurisdiction. And I think what he's trying to say, and Senator Starr, correct me if I'm wrong, is like you go to the Department of Transportation for the permit for a ODOT-owned road, but if it's a City of Portland road or Multnomah County road, that you would go to the county, or you would go to the City of Portland, whoever has the jurisdiction of that particular road. If this was written in a way where the permit was issued by whoever has jurisdiction over the road in which you want to do this activity, would that change any of the constitutional issues at all? That, which was kind of the main reason we've been trying to amend this thing.
Chairman, Chair, members of the committee, I don't think that it would. And the is language in the vehicle code about the different road authorities and the different authorities that we have. For ODOT is in charge of the state highways, cities in charge of city streets, county roads. Then it would be up to the, if you did it that way, then it would be up to the person to figure out, am I on a city street, a county road, or a state highway? Something to think about. Or you can do it, I think, as suggested, department or local government. But if you want the person to go to Portland for a city street, we could mention something about the appropriate road authority.
Mr. Chair, Ted Reutlinger with Legislative Council. The only other thing I could think about was if you had then local jurisdictions taking wildly different positions on the issuance of the permits. And again, Section 3 requires, it talks about public safety requirements that are adopted by ODOT by rule. The question then would be, well, do you want the cities and counties having their own separate safety regulations, or do you want to go just with the ODOT regulations? And so from a constitutional perspective, I think the only thing that could make it more unconstitutional is if you had very different interpretations being given on this authority by different local jurisdictions. And so it depended on where you went and who you went to as to whether you could get a permit.
One other thing I'd like to add, along with Ted's comment, if we do have different jurisdictions with different ideas, it becomes especially dangerous when we have the may issue a permit. Mm-hmm. When it's a shall, the discretion is narrow, but since we brought it to a may, that it's more discretion to begin with, and then if we have the different jurisdictions with different ideas, broadens it even further. Mm-hmm. Just to be aware of.
Isn't the discretion, though, clarified in subsection A and B? I mean, that's the... If you basically accomplished A and B, then the discretion seems to me to go away. Isn't that how this is read?
Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Can you...
Well, you mentioned the fact that there's the may. They may issue the permit. But that may is then really determined whether they satisfy the subsection A and B, you know, having the insurance and that they're going to meet the public safety requirements. So it seems to me that if a group abides by those two qualifiers, the may becomes moot. Am I not reading that right?
I believe that the Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, that person could meet all the qualifications, but if there were extenuating circumstances, I believe that may is in place to grant the authority to say, you know what, we understand that you have everything that you're supposed to have, but it's a blizzard outside and we don't want you outside, or we don't, I don't know what other reasons there might be, but if there were extenuating circumstances that they couldn't account for in rule, that may come into a place.
It seems like to me that what we're doing is limiting the agency to that they have two things that they can write, two things that they, one is liability insurance, the second one is rules having to do with safety. Those are the only two situations where the department, or as I read it, the city could deny you a permit. And so I don't see how the city could deny you a permit if you followed ODOT's safety rules that we're allowing them to write by rule. So it seems like by us saying that the department writes the safety rules, that as long if you were complying with that, the city would have to also meet that. So that's the first part. And then the second thing is that I think that whatever rules they adopted, that would have to have the extenuating circumstances would have to be a safety-related circumstance. And the only two ways that the city or the department could get out of issuing you a permit is if you didn't have insurance or you didn't meet public safety requirements adopted by ODOT. That's how I'm reading it and how I understood it. So I don't see how the cities could all come up with a whole series of different criteria, because this is how it's read. I mean, it basically says ODOT's going to set the rules. And then the second thing is that I'm not sure the extenuating circumstances is they can only be public safety connected. Am I reading that wrong?
Chair Metzger, Senator George, I think the only way to ensure that someone is going to get a permit if they meet both the qualifications is to turn that may into a shall.
No, I don't want to keep that.
Okay, Senator Monroe.
Yeah, I would suggest the following language. Section 3, number 1, the Department of Transportation or a local government, comma, whichever has primary jurisdiction, comma, may issue a permit that authorizes, etc., satisfaction of the department or local government, colon.
I know we're commenting on the fly, but do you have any thought about
Mr. Chair, I think that's close. But to get back to Senator George's question quickly, my concern about differing interpretations would be is if you had a city interpreting the Department of Transportation's rules, it seems to me it's possible that cities and counties could come up with differing interpretations about how the rules apply to the same conduct in different counties, and that's kind of where I was going there. And the second thing is that this does still say may. Department of Transportation may issue a permit.
Yep.
What that means is that the department doesn't have to, even if you have proof of liability insurance and you've met the safety requirements. That's the way that this thing is written right now. It doesn't specify what reasons the department could use to deny you a permit. It simply says, I mean, it opens the door for that. And then finally, based upon Senator Monroe's language, I think, I'm not sure that's exactly the language we would use, but we could draft this to say, to accomplish the goal, that you have to go to the jurisdiction that has authority over the particular street or intersection that you want to engage in speech at in order to get your permit. Well, we can write that. And I prefer to have at least, you know, 10 minutes to try and do that.
Okay. So,
can we recess for 10 minutes?
So, we have Tuesday, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the direction the committee wants to go? I mean, because we're down to the kind of the nuts and bolts here. I want to know if you have a different idea. So, Senator Johnson.
I guess the one thing, we have pretty many of the interested parties here in the room. I saw Ms. Meyer come over and have a consultation with our battery of lawyers. I don't know whether or not giving them the opportunity to join Mr. Rutlinger in his 10-minute recess until next Tuesday or whenever it is we're going to take this up again, maybe we could get something hammered out that made sure that we met everybody's needs. It's interesting to just have everybody with a dog in the fight, and ODOT has just joined the room here sort of simultaneously, and I was simply going to capitalize on the fact that they were all here. Rather than have us guessing and maybe have ODOT object at this point, they haven't spoken, and I just am concerned if we're now inviting yet another perspective to the table.
Mm-hmm. Well, before I ask if they have any thoughts, I'll ask other members. Senator George?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My issue is still going to be, because I do believe that it should be perceived as being prohibiting, and that's $1 million liability insurance. If this was the same, if it was a number equal to the minimum required for liability for your automobile, I'd be okay, fine, no problem with that. But nobody in this room is going to agree to that because it's so doggone low. But this is so doggone high. And so I think it will be prohibiting free speech. And so I'm heart burning on the $1 million, too.
Okay. Senator George?
I want to get back to this question, Tom, that we talked about with the cities and having the different jurisdictions. And just so I understand it, really we're limited because this is protected speech. It seems like to me that DOT has to issue the permit, even if it says may, has to issue the permit if you do liability insurance or if they meet the public safety requirements adopted by rule, because it seems like to me that what we've been explained to you so far is the only limitations on protected speech that we can put in is if there's public safety concerns. And so what we've said was, I mean, by doing this, is that this is protected speech that we're regulating. So what we're saying is they may issue the permit upon two events happening. One is a liability insurance and one is a public safety. And I'm trying to think of other things upon where either ODOT or the city could deny a permit if it wasn't based on public safety or the insurance thing. And it worked this through with me because the way I'm reading this is we are regulating a constitutionally protected speech. So we're not really, it's not really a may. What it is it's a may subject to these two items here. Being fulfilled. What would be a regulation or a denial, appropriate denial that wouldn't be unconstitutional that DOT or a local government could put into? I mean, how would they would deny a permit if somebody met these two and not be discriminating based on content or based on the group? You see what I'm saying?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, first, I'm not sure why. In line 10, it says may instead of shall. I don't know the answer to that question. But to answer your question, perhaps there's some other safety issue that comes up that's not addressed in the rules of the department. This would at least give the department the authority to say, we're not going to give you a permit because that road's flooded and has been for the last 2 weeks or something like that. That's all I can think of sitting here right now.
All right, but it would have to be, sorry, Chief of Kid. It have to be something to do with public safety, specifically.
Yes, given the constitutional issues that we've discussed, anything that strayed into the regulation of the content of the speech or a decision based upon who the speaker was, any of those things would clearly be out of bounds. I agree that it would have to be based on safety, just like everything else in this bill is.
Senator Metzger and members of the committee, I think the may have come about as part of a conversation that I had had in trying to work through this language, and it is the concern that Ted just described, that because the limitation in Section 3, Sub 1, Sub B, is only those public safety requirements that have already been adopted by rule, in a particular situation, there may be additional public safety requirements that would make the Department of Transportation concerned about issuing the permit, but that would not be covered by an existing rule. And so wanting to make sure that those safety considerations could be addressed by ODOT and that they wouldn't be forced to issue a permit if there were safety concerns. I think it's difficult to anticipate what those were, but that was sort of the reason for having the may. I think having the shall may simply put a little bit of additional pressure on the Department of Transportation in adopting the rules to be comprehensive in trying to address the kinds of public safety concerns that they would want considered in issuing the permit.
Mr. Chairman, go ahead. Okay, that's what I need cleared up, and I want to make sure we put it on the record. What we're talking about here is by putting in the may, we're giving the department, and if we make the amendments, Senator Starr's amendments, the local governments, the ability to have a little bit of more flexibility than what they actually put in the rules, guessing what's going to happen. But their limitation in the may would be public safety limitations that they would have to justify with their city attorneys or the DOJ would have to defend as being constitutional limitations on the free speech. So the may is really just allowing a little more flexibility in the public safety realm outside of rules they may not think of.
And Senator Metzger, Senator George, that was the intent of it.
All right,
yes.
Great. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Monroe.
But implicitly, the word may also means may not.
Senator Metzger, Senator Monroe, that's correct. And changing that to a shall, and then, again, I think what that does is it simply requires the Department of Transportation to be more clear in articulating in the rules what the public safety concerns would be for issuing the permit, limits a little bit their ability to deal with unusual situations that are not covered by the rule, but also may strengthen this in terms of constitutional challenges.
Good.
I would like to just ask one more thing. Not to throw another cog in the gear here, but one of the reasons that we've kind of entered into the discussion about local jurisdictions, you know, to kind of expand who would have issued this permit, I believe was based on the testimony we had from Cindy Robert and others about wanting to preserve their local ordinances. For example, Medford with the panhandling ordinance. But it would seem to me, this is why we were looking at, I'm not trying to preempt, but if then you had that and someone were to deny a permit as the local jurisdiction because we have an ordinance against panhandling, that's unconstitutional, then basically you have re-entered the constitutional issue into the ordinance and denying it for something which would not be appropriate. I mean, I guess I don't see that having the local jurisdiction, if the idea is to try to circumvent a local ordinance that's unconstitutional, actually accomplishes that goal. If that is, yeah. I mean, because that's how it was kind of presented. You know, we got local ordinances against stuff that isn't, that is based on content. And so we want the local control to do that, but if you exercise it on that basis, then, you know, we've come back to square one. If it's just because, and this may be proper, we want to have local jurisdictions do it because they understand the conditions of the road that day, that's okay. But I would just want to make sure if we go ahead with this that no one has the idea that, oh, well, now we're going to be able to enforce our local ordinances that are unconstitutional because of that. It would have to be for the same reason, safety, conditions of the time, flooded roads, 3 feet of snow, not a good time to have an event. Yes, Senator.
Well, that raises an issue question, and this is for Ledge Council. So let's say, for instance, a local government, we adopt the language that I support that Senator Starr has proposed, and a local government goes ahead and goes beyond what would be we're trying to keep this within its constitutional bounds. A local jurisdiction goes out and takes an unconstitutional action under the what they view as flexibility, which we think may be against the statute. If they did something unconstitutional, is there severability there where just because they're doing something unconstitutional does not necessarily refer on this statute as being unconstitutional. Is there severability since they're going beyond the statute and they're taking an unconstitutional action? It doesn't reflect back that this statute would then be unconstitutional. Do you see what I'm asking? Is there severability there?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, it depends. The great lawyer. First thing they teach us in law school. It really depends on the language that you adopt here. If you adopted the Senator Starr amendments, which basically would defer to a local ordinance, then your constitutional issue in that case, I think, would be with the local ordinance and what it says and how it's applied to you. The state law simply grants an exception. In other words, it doesn't preempt the local people. And so if there was a local ordinance that prohibited panhandling in a way that would be unconstitutional, just like the previous state law was, then that's a local issue, and you'd have to go to court to challenge the local ordinance and not this law. If you did something a little bit less than what Senator Starr's amendment suggested and simply allowed the local governments to administer the permits, again, I think the issue would be with the local government and how they administered the permit. In other words, it's how are they applying the state law. The law in and of itself wouldn't necessarily be unconstitutional. It's how the city or county administered it and applied it to people who were applying for a permit.
Okay. So the sense I have, and I want feedback from here because I don't want to send them out, we have one more committee possibility, which is Tuesday, so we could do this Tuesday, but we'd have to do it Tuesday if we're going to do it. So give me feedback as to whether I'm interpreting what I'm hearing right. What I'm hearing is that the Dash 4 seems pretty good, with the exception of Senator George, because of the $1 million liability, has signaled that, might still be a no. I have heard what I appear to be pretty strong consensus on the Dash 4, but would like to add language that would have the local jurisdiction be the issuing body, whoever has jurisdiction over that particular road in which the request is being made. Do I make this assumption correct?
One point.
Yes.
Would it be possible that when we send them out, that we leave the amount of the liability insurance as a blank and allow Senator George to perhaps ask some questions about where some liability insurance would be? We fill that in on Tuesday. Just a question. Because I don't have any idea whether – I don't have any depth of perception on what that means to –
On its face, no, but I guess the question would be where we'd have the expertise that's going to help us determine that by Tuesday morning as to what that is. I mean, that'd be my only question.
I don't know where I would come from that.
Senator Johnson.
I've been very supportive of this, but as the discussion has matured, it's beginning to worry me a little bit more. I think we've approached this with the goal of how do we figure out how to keep the Fill the Boot campaign going. My concern is that as we begin to look at this, what happens in the interest of free speech, juxtaposed against ODOT's desire to keep a safe functioning highway system, where you have a big organization, and I say this with no pejorative, I'm just using an example, Hare Krishnas. Big organization, they can afford $1 million policy, they're dressed in bright orange clothes, and they're out crawling around on Highway 84. I just want to make sure we're dealing with a lot of unintended consequences from last session, and I want to make sure in our haste to try to figure out how to make this fill the boot thing work that we don't invite chaos on the highways. I tend to be very supportive of a higher liability simply because in our highly litigious society, somebody gets hit on a highway, someone's going to get sued, someone's policy is going to be looked to. And if we lower the amount too much, then we've got chaos on our transportation system. And so the challenge for me here is to try to figure out how to get a clear path to the firefighters who do immeasurable good for thousands of kids and not speed up traffic times, impede the movements of goods and people. So I just felt like sharing that. I want very badly to get to yes for the firemen, but, boy, I don't want to end up with something that brings traffic to a halt on 405 at 5 o'clock some Friday afternoon.
Well, Senator Johnson, you do raise a good point. And, I mean, the reality is that with any of these nuances we're talking about. We generally don't let people in the highway. And so if we created this opportunity, I think we have to accept the fact that while we may have MDA with our great firefighters one Friday, next Friday it could be the NRA stopping traffic, getting money. It could be Right to Life. The next week it could be Planned Parenthood. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could be any of those who want to solicit contributions. I mean, that is a reality. I mean, that's not a judgment. It's just, I think your point is valid. Right now, nobody can do that, and we kind of have a wink and a nod with the firefighters because we love what they do, but if we create the statutory, that I think we have to be fair. Is that a fair assessment from our legal counsel? That
Senator Metzger, members, yes, that is correct.
Senator.
Is there a way, and I'd have to ask this to Mr. Livingston because I don't know where the high visibility areas are all over the state, but is there a way to at least get ODOT's system out of this discussion? And that way you're not parsing whether it's state or county. I don't know whether your best fundraising is done on county streets, municipalities. I don't presume that under any circumstances you're out in I-5, although the Sunset Highway might be a really lucrative area to work some morning. But I don't know whether or not your successful fundraising could help describe what system of roads we're dealing with to kind of narrow the discussion here so we're not blending ODOT and county and municipality.
Mr. Please come forward.
People are waiting for about a half hour to get on.
Maybe we ought to just give him a free pass on the Sunset on Friday nights, every Friday night.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Bob Livingston, representing the Oregon State Firefighters Council. Historically, and I think there are representatives from ODOT there in the room, let me give you a couple examples of where we've been effective in these campaigns. And ironically, ODOT does have authority even inside counties and municipalities. So let me give you an example. Liberty Street down here, Commercial Street, are part of the state highway road. Lancaster Drive is another example. And so the fact of the matter is that we don't want to get bogged down on that, but that's where we've been successful, at least in a local example. And it's my understanding, and I hope I'm answering your question correctly, is that right now, ODOT would issue the permits, and if just to keep this bill moving, if we had to stay in those, if I'm correct, and if they still have authority on those, and why I believe they have authority on those is like, as an example, when the Marion County Bridge goes down with a traffic accident, ODOT responds to those and works with the city. And so, in light of trying to move this forward, another solution may be in the interim until we kind of vet this issue a little bit. If I'm correct and if those are under the jurisdictional bounds of ODOT, maybe that, as a suggestion, maybe that's what we limit this endeavor to right now. It gets the local governments off the hook, if I'm correct. I mean, the reality of it is I want to put it on the record. Our organization would never do anything on 405, I-5, 205, you know, out here on Highway 22. But I gave you some examples of areas that, it's my understanding, are state roads, but are inside jurisdictions at lower speed levels.
That's all I'm trying to ascertain. And I was being facetious. You're not going to be out on on the Sunset. But I don't know, Senator George just mentioned to me 99W, which I think is clearly within ODOT's jurisdiction. But I don't know about Lancaster.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, as an example, Highway 99 that runs through Newburgh, it's inside the Newburgh, but I think ODOT still owns it. That's an example of, I think, where we've done a Fill the Boot campaign, and we've worked with ODOT before. So I don't know if I'm helping ourselves or are trying to articulate it here. We could certainly narrow it down. It gets the cities off the hook a little bit to do those areas where ODOT technically has the authority, but it still falls into those large populous areas with inside cities or with inside kind of unincorporated areas of populated areas such as in the Tualatin Valley, Washington County areas.
Can I ask one question? How many times have you guys been cited before, any of your folks?
Mr. Chair, to my knowledge, we have never been cited. However, certainly not to throw fire on this situation.
So to speak.
So to speak. Yes. The police chief, and all due respect to him, he said, hey, I have a law that's on the books here. If you go out in the street, we can't treat you any differently. We will cite you if you go out in the street. And I think that's what has occurred. And now that people are being more aware of that, that it puts our law enforcement officers in a precarious position.
Mm-hmm. I'm posing this question to the lawyers here because I'm just trying to think up answers as we're working on this. Is there a way to use a date certain as part of a prescription that would help us contain the amount of activity in the roads? My impression, and I don't know this, but my impression is that fill the boot happens whenever it works for each firehouse, that they pick a date when they have the most volunteers or they don't have other training activities or other important professional activities, so they pick that date. I'm wondering if there is any opportunity to have a date certain that is the fill the boot day, and that we could try to describe something that meets Ms. Meyer's concerns about free speech, but we use a date to contain the proliferation of people seeking permits to be in the highways.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I would be reluctant to be a specific date, and here's why. I think some of people obviously wouldn't want to do it in a blizzard, wouldn't want to do it when it's 120 degrees outside. The other thing is these people are off duty when they do these things. As you know, with volunteer bases, it's really important to make sure that your volunteers are available to do those events. And so that's historically why you see a little bit of flexibility to meet the needs of the people that have done these campaigns.
I was just hunting for a solution.
I appreciate that.
Okay. Well, my thinking is a couple of choices that I would think that we can do at this point. One is, colleagues, we could do the Dash 4 amendment and just move this bill now and have them continue to work on some of the, you know, Senator Monroe, Senator Starr, and others about local jurisdiction on the House side, keeping us informed whether we want to concur or not. We can do it that way. That buys more time than do that. Or we can ask for an amendment to be drafted along some of the lines that Senator Starr pointed out about the local jurisdiction combination for Tuesday. And maybe that works, but that is our drop dead date. And you know, I'm anxious to keep the bill moving so that discussion would go. We don't have a lot of time if we do the Tuesday one, but I'm willing to do that. We'll probably have about 10 days for them to work for the House side if they want to continue to add to it. I'm open, but I think I'd like to keep the bill moving. Senator Johnson.
I think maybe we could blend the two. Keep the bill moving today, act on the Dash 4s, give in the sense of the committee instruction to the interested parties to keep working, and see if they can get language that is acceptable on the House side. That way it keeps the bill moving. What I worry about is getting bogged down, not being able to do anything on Tuesday, and the doors closed on the opportunity.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Well, you know, I respect that. I just think that we'll have the Dash 4s on Tuesday, and if we can't get other language, we can always move the Dash 4s on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
I would prefer to send a bill out that I feel good about voting yes on, rather than you know, hope and pray that the House fixes it.
I agree.
You know, it's Friday. I don't know. Heidi is working hard, but I think that we can get some amendments to have a good idea of where we're headed, and I don't think the drafting would be that difficult.
And I'm happy to join that opinion.
Okay, so my sense is what we want is a modification of the Dash 4, which provides the issuing authority to be the authority who has jurisdiction over the particular highway in which the activity is to be conducted. Is that correct? Is that what I want? Okay. So what we will do is we will carry the bill over for Tuesday. We'll prepare that amendment, and then we will have before us that amendment as it is written. We'll have the Dash 4, as Senator Starr pointed out, with us, and we'll make a decision at that point of what we send to the floor. Is that understandable, Senator Green?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I've been sitting here smiling because the vision of a bunch of us with toy guns in the middle of Twilliger Curve on Highway 5 raising money for NRA really, really kind of intrigues me. And I mean, I think we're really broad here. I really do. And I think this, as Senator Johnson said, we need to tighten this thing up. because that really came to mind. That would be a perfect place to raise money because they would all be caught very quickly, and you'd be able to just walk down the deal and collect the money from them. And if you had a gun, they'd probably donate it.
Okay. So, yes, Mr. Rellinger, please come forward. We're about done here, folks. I think you probably want some direction also.
Mr. Chair, Ted Rellinger. To clarify, when you talked about the local government, are we including ODOT in the mix, or is it just, I mean, so that for a state highway, you'd have to go to ODOT, for a city, you go to the city, that's the approach that you want?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, yes, sir. The community, I mean, where I've seen this operate, it's been done on a county road. So, I mean, and I wouldn't think that they would go to ODOT to get permission to do this on the county road. So. And then you got a lot of communities around the state that the state highway is the main thoroughfare through the community. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense that in those situations, that's the department that they go to.
Okay. All right. So what we'll do, we're going to close the work session on 1084. We will be meeting Tuesday at 1 o'clock, and this will be posted with what we have before us. And as soon as the amendment is prepared, Patrick will have it. Mm-hmm. And if you want to get that, contact Patrick to disperse that to any and all folks who would be interested in it. With that, we're adjourned.